Today is Friday, January 22nd, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Joe Biden ramps up COVID response.
Our national strategy is comprehensive. It's based on science, not politics. It's based on truth, not denial.
Also, President Biden's first moves draw GOP criticism.
Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy say the Biden administration apparently decided its first priority was to hurt American workers.
Plus, U.S. proposes a five-year extension of a nuclear arms treaty with Russia. These stories and more are next. On his first full day in office, President Joe Biden rolled out his national pandemic strategy, which includes several executive actions related to vaccinations and testing. Patsy Wedakuswara has more on the new administration's effort to combat the coronavirus at home and around the world.
With more than 405,000 American deaths, on Thursday, President Joe Biden launched his plan to combat the pandemic.
Our national strategy is comprehensive. It's based on science, not politics. It's based on truth, not denial, and it's detailed.
Ms. Nussbaum is setting up the pandemic testing board.
Biden signed a series of executive actions, including a national mask mandate, testing and quarantine requirements for travelers, support to reopen schools, and protection for essential workers.
This is a wartime undertaking. Today, I'm signing an executive action to use the Defense Production Act and all other available authorities to direct all federal agencies and private industry to accelerate the making of everything that needs to protect, test, vaccinate, and take care of our people.
The U.S. is also mending ties with the global health community. White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci on Thursday announced the U.S. is rejoining the World Health Organization and supporting the global effort to combat the pandemic.
The United States to join COVAX and support the ACT Accelerator to advance multilateral efforts for COVID-19 vaccine, therapeutic and diagnostic distribution, equitable access, and research and development.
COVAX is a 92-nation vaccine collaboration rejected by then-President Trump in line with his America First vaccine strategy. The approach is criticized by those who point out that the virus knows no borders. Dr. Annan Parekh is the Bipartisan Policy Center's chief medical advisor.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, other countries and our partners to ensure their stability and for our national security and economic interests, it's really important that we help as many countries as we can.
The renewed support and resumption of funding for WHO marks a departure from the Trump administration, who often criticized the global agency for its pandemic response. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
This is a good day for WHO and a good day for global health.
More than 17 million Americans have received COVID-19 vaccines. The Biden administration is now focused on delivering 100 million shots in the first 100 days. Patsy Wedakuswara, VOA News.
But President Biden's first moves are drawing GOP criticism amid his calls for national unity. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Newly installed Senate Chief Chuck Schumer says the nation's opened a new chapter.
Our new president and this new Senate commenced the work of rebuilding our country.
The president yesterday signing orders reversing Trump action on immigration, climate change, and the XL pipeline, among other things. In the Senate,
it took several big steps in the wrong direction.
And the House.
These are the wrong priorities at the wrong time.
GOP leaders Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy say the Biden administration apparently decided its first priority was to hurt American workers. Both say Democrats do not have a sweeping mandate for liberal change, even with control of both chambers and the White House. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Biden plans to take executive action to provide a stopgap measure of financial relief to millions of Americans. Biden wants to get assistance flowing while Congress begins to consider the Democratic president's much larger $1.9 trillion package to help those affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The two executive orders that Biden is to sign Friday would increase food aid, protect job seekers on unemployment, and clear a path for federal workers and contractors to get a $15 hourly minimum wage. The Biden White House has not provided a timeline for getting its proposed relief package through Congress. U.S. officials say President Biden is proposing a five-year extension of a nuclear arms treaty with Russia. AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The new START treaty is set to expire next month. It's the last remaining agreement constraining the U.S. and Russian nuclear weapons, limiting each country to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads. Russia has said for some time it would welcome an extension, and while the Trump administration did make a late bid to extend the treaty, it came with conditions rejected by Russia. Meanwhile, NATO's Secretary General is calling on the U.S. and Russia to extend the treaty and to broaden it. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The Kremlin has welcomed U.S. President Biden's proposal to extend the last remaining nuclear arms control treaty between the two countries, which is set to expire in 2 weeks. Russia President Vladimir Putin's spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Friday that Russia stands for extending the pact and is waiting to see the details of the U.S. proposal. The treaty, signed in 2010 by President Barack Obama and Russia President Dmitry Medvedev, limits each country to no more than 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads. World leaders have congratulated Joe Biden following his inauguration Wednesday as the 46th U.S. president. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, many allies have especially welcomed his decision to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement.
After 4 years of turbulent transatlantic relations, the European Union Commission head, Ursula von der Leyen, offered a warm welcome for President Joe Biden.
Once again, after 4 long years, Europe has a friend in the White House. From climate change to health, from digitalization to democracy, these are global challenges that need renewed and improved global cooperation.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson had a warmer relationship with former President Trump, but Johnson said Wednesday he and Biden have a joint common agenda.
It's a fantastic thing for America. It's a step forward for the country that's been through a bumpy period.
There were big celebrations in Kosovo, where a street bears the name of Joe Biden's late son, Beau Biden, who worked in the country with the U.S. Justice Department following the 1999 Kosovo War. U.S. allies in the Asia-Pacific region also welcomed the new U.S. administration. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
There's a lot of work for us together, whether it's on climate, on energy, on international security, and importantly, regional security here in the Indo-Pacific.
Japan's Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga echoed his Australian counterpart. He said, I hope to closely cooperate with the new president to achieve a free and open Indo-Pacific region. Hua Chunying, Chinese Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesperson, said, we hope that the new U.S. government will view China and our relations in an objective and rational manner. Meanwhile, Iran's leader said the ball was in Biden's court over the future of the 2015 nuclear deal, which the U.S. president has said he wants to rejoin if Tehran meets its commitments. Russia's ambassador to the U.S. called Biden's inauguration a new chapter in relations with Washington. There was no official response from President Vladimir Putin. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The National Guard is sending thousands of troops back home from deployment in the nation's capital, but where they're staying in the interim has created controversy. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
About 15,000 National Guard members are still in Washington, D.C., about half the number deployed to ensure security for Joe Biden's inauguration. But now that the security detail has ended, thousands of Guard members were told to leave the Capitol building. Politico reported hundreds were sent to a nearby parking garage, crammed close together despite COVID fears, and had to share a bathroom, quoting one who said they felt betrayed by the lawmakers that they had been protecting. Some members of Congress responded they could sleep in their offices. Iraq War veteran Senator Tammy Duckworth says she called the military brass until the Guard's men and women were allowed back into the Capitol building. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi said Thursday she will consult with fellow Democrats in the coming days about the Senate's readiness to begin an impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump for his alleged role in the January 6th riots at the U.S. Capitol. International edition Steve Miller gets the latest from VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson.
Right. Well, that is what every Capitol Hill reporter was wondering, because quite frankly, we're at kind of a nitty-gritty detailed part of the impeachment trial process. We know, of course, that the House has already passed that one article of impeachment, finding the president guilty of inciting insurrection in that January 6th Capitol riot. But they're still holding on to that article of impeachment because timing is really important here. Speaker Pelosi did not want to transmit that article over to the U.S. Senate in the middle of Biden's inauguration week, ruining this moment of possible unity, of a moment in the sun for President Biden, a moment to kind of step away from President Trump and his era for just a moment. So she's saying, look, I was waiting for the U.S. Senate to come back into session. And of course, they did today. The question is, are they ready to mount a Senate impeachment trial? That is quite an undertaking that requires each side preparing their defense, their offense, gathering evidence, deciding who their lawyers are on President Trump's side. That's a lot of work that just can't happen overnight.
So what kind of discussions are taking place regarding the Senate?
Right. So the impeachment managers, those are the members of the U.S. House of Representatives whom Speaker Pelosi has chosen to prosecute the case against President Trump, have to prepare their case. But they also are waiting over on the other side to see what President Trump is doing. And nobody quite knows who he's chosen as his defense lawyers, what kind of defense he's going to mount. And then, of course, we have some really thorny legal questions about how exactly you run a Senate impeachment trial of a president who's no longer in office. There are a lot of questions about whether the Supreme Court Chief Justice needs to preside over that trial or if somebody else in the Senate can do it. A lot of these details that really the Senate lives and dies on, they need to figure this out and sort it out, because really this is an unprecedented situation that they're trying a president who is no longer in the White House.
Now, this is a Democrat-led effort by Speaker Pelosi, who filed the article of impeachment. What about Senate Leader Mitch McConnell? What is his latest take on things?
Right. So we're in a really interesting situation there because, of course, as your listeners may know, the Senate is actually tied right now. So there's 50 members who caucus with the Democrats and 50 Republicans, the tie-breaking vote in the person of Vice President Kamala Harris. But what that means is that there's kind of a power-sharing agreement discussion going on between the new Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, who, of course, was the Senate Majority Leader up until just a day or two ago. They have to figure out who's in power in the committees who are of concern, how all of this goes down when they're actually sharing power. So it's a really unusual situation that there's really no blueprint for.
Any idea when the Senate trial may begin?
Ultimately, Mitch McConnell would like to see it start sometime in February so that President Trump has time to mount his defense. I think that Democrats are also playing around with the idea of what benefits them the most, because, of course, they don't want to steal any fire away from President Biden, who is really trying to get a lot done in the first 10, 20 days of his presidency and really keep the attention on him and his agenda.
That's International Edition's Steve Miller speaking with VOA's Catherine Gibson in Washington. This is the Voice of America. The death toll from the coronavirus in Germany has passed 50,000, a number that has risen swiftly over recent weeks, even as infection figures are finally declining. The country's disease control center, the Robert Koch Institute, said Friday that 859 deaths were reported over the past 24 hours, taking the total so far to 50,642. Germany had a relatively small number of deaths in the pandemic's first phase and was able to lift many restrictions quickly. But it saw much higher levels of infection in the fall and winter. Hundreds of deaths have been reported daily over recent weeks. International Olympics Committee President Thomas Bach and local organizers are pushing back against reports that the postponed Tokyo Olympics will be canceled. Now set to open July 23rd, The Tokyo Games were postponed 10 months ago, after the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic, and now the event appears threatened again. The Times of London, citing unidentified government sources, reported that the Games will have to be cancelled. In a statement Friday, the local organizing committee did not address directly the Times story, but said the Olympics were going forward and had the support of Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Afo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. President Biden is reversing some major decisions taken by President Trump, like rejoining the Paris Climate Environment Agreement and World Health Organization. The Palestinians are hoping that the new U.S. president may cancel what they describe as anti-Palestinian decisions made by Trump administration and take actions such as re-establishing diplomatic channels with the Palestinian Authority. Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, discussed the outlook with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
I would expect some steps in that direction. Now, whether the new president, the 46th president of the United States, Joe Biden, will have the peace of mind and the stability, considering the domestic agenda, that very demanding domestic agenda he's facing with the continuing threat by the COVID-19 pandemic and the damage it has done to the American economy, which will keep any administration busy for at least the first year in its term, just focusing on that to put an end to that crisis. Whether it would have that peace of mind to begin to deal with a highly demanding issue like the Palestine issue remains to be seen. I do expect some steps soon within the administration, because frankly, even though some in the administration and beyond in Washington here keep talking about Washington or Americans somewhat tired of the Middle East, that there is an element of Middle East fatigue in Washington. Frankly, the Middle East is not tired of Washington. So it's not going to be easy to, you know, come up with a divorce between the two, considering the centrality of the region to a U.S. interest, particularly, of course, Israel, because Palestine involves Israel. So I would say that some renewal of relationship is expected. I wouldn't be surprised if the Palestinian mission in Washington is reopened. I wouldn't be surprised if the administration would reopen some sort of diplomatic mission, a consulate or what have you, in the area of Jerusalem to replace the one that was closed a couple of years back. I would say that issues pertaining to settlements, issues pertaining to diplomacy, issues pertaining to the two-state solution, we might see a gradual reinstitution of these issues as part and parcel of U.S. policy toward the Arab-Israeli conflict.
Could some Arab countries witness a departure from President Trump's policies toward them under Biden administration, and to what direction?
I think so. I think they all would, frankly speaking. I mean, we have so many different problematic components of U.S. policy in the region, be it Syria, be it Iraq, be it Yemen, be it Libya. All these countries are going to see the results of a tweaked U.S. policy, to put it in colloquial terms. In other words, there will be some reassessment and there will be some changes made in these policies based on the fact that these festering issues have been ignored seriously. The U.S. has not been engaged in diplomatic efforts in a serious manner, and it has abdicated, if you will, its leadership role in doing so, which has affected not only its relationships in the region, but even beyond, like neighboring regions like Europe. It has affected our relationship with NATO and so on. So I would say these countries that I mentioned, plus definitely, I think, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and other countries in the Gulf and so on, these, based on recent developments, should expect some change in the Biden administration's approach to the bilateral relationships.
That's my colleague Mohammed El-Shenawi speaking with Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington. The top U.S. infectious disease expert, Dr. Anthony Fauci, has told the World Health Organization the new Biden administration will rejoin the organization as a fully engaged member and actively support its efforts to end the coronavirus pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In a speech to the WHO's executive board meeting Thursday, Fauci sought to reassure the organization the difficulties it experienced under the Trump administration were over. Fauci heaped praise on the WHO for its role in leading the global public health response to the pandemic in relentlessly working with nations in their fight against the coronavirus. He said President Joe Biden had sent letters retracting the previous administration's withdrawal from WHO to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres and to WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Fauci described Tedros as my dear friend. Former President Donald Trump had accused Tedros of kowtowing to China, blaming him for letting the coronavirus situation spin out of control. Trump subsequently froze U.S. funding to the organization and announced the U.S. would withdraw from the WHO in July. Fauci said the United States intended to meet its financial obligations to WHO. He said the Biden administration would work constructively to strengthen and reform the WHO and to help strengthen the international response to the virus that causes the COVID-19 disease. COVAX is a global vaccine alliance designed to speed development and ensure distribution of viable vaccines and treatments for the respiratory ailment. ACT Accelerator, short for or Access to COVID-19 Tools Accelerator, is part of that effort. Fauci noted it will not be easy to respond to COVID-19, rebuild and strengthen global health around the world. He added, however, this had to be done as societies were being devastated by the worsening pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. military has so far contained the coronavirus within its ranks, thanks in part to strict discipline and the ability to easily enforce social distancing rules on military bases. But as the Pentagon rolls out COVID-19 vaccines, it is encountering a new challenge, how to convince service members to voluntarily take the vaccine. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
The first doses of the coronavirus vaccine arriving at Camp Humphreys, the largest overseas U.S. military base. A big step toward protecting the nearly 30,000 U.S. troops here in South Korea. But at least for now, the military won't be forcing anyone to receive the vaccine. Military officials tell VOA it could be up to 2 years before the U.S. Food and Drug Administration gives the vaccine full approval that would allow it to become mandatory. Colonel Doug Luger, the lead U.S. medical officer in South Korea, who spoke to VOA remotely, says it's an unusual situation for military leaders.
Here in the military, especially, you know, the Army, we're not used to telling people to volunteer or asking them to volunteer for things like this. That's been an interesting thing to work through to help make sure people make good, informed decisions.
Like anywhere else, there has been some skepticism about the vaccine, which was developed much more quickly than many expected. To allay those concerns, the military rolled out educational campaigns to combat disinformation. And to set an example, senior leaders were among the first to get the shots.
I think we're hitting about the right tone with that, not ceding the battlefield to the conspiracy theorists. Getting the information out there, but on the other hand, not being overbearing or strong army people.
Luger says the U.S. military does have experience administering voluntary vaccines, but not at this level or with this much urgency. So far, the plan is working, says Colonel Lee Peters.
Since we've seen the vaccine and the people have kind of like observed and watched and did their own research and education, we've seen those numbers grow dramatically to where I would say very few people are now saying, hey, I don't want the vaccine.
Military officials won't say how many have taken the vaccine here in South Korea. For now, frontline health workers and other critical positions are first in line. Eventually, the vaccine will be available to everyone who wants it. But it's not clear when it will be mandatory. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.